Hello, Oasis.
Hey, welcome.
Is that the start? Did we just start?
I don't know. Yes.
We just started.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
So glad to be back.
Wow. You need to tell them your ice cream.
We're a little low energy.
It's low. It is low.
But it doesn't make any sense, though, for some. Okay, it's a little nice outside, so it's hard to be in this cement box that we're sitting in. But also, some of us just had some Culver's. And I love Culver's. I think it's delicious. But after you eat it, I've never felt good about myself leaving that establishment. You do grease, and then you mix it with grease, and then you just fill in all
cream.
The grease with, yeah.
Cream. It's
like
cream.
Deep,
it's thick
cream.
Cream.
And then I just leave, and I feel bloated, and I feel tired, yeah. And I feel sad. So I'm trying to bounce back.
I'm sad for you right now.
But I do love you, Culver's, if you're watching.
It's so good.
That's good. It's enjoyable.
Yeah, I like it.
I had Guadalajara's.
Wow.
So good.
Ballin'.
Some Oros con Pollo.
Do you worship Guadalajara's?
I do not worship quads.
There, I want to take that off your plate.
But
for
I
the
like
transition.
Quads.
There you go.
Hey, I got a mixer for you guys. Right now in this season, what is your go-to worship song?
So just the other...
You have to sing it.
No.
You have to sing it.
No. All of a sudden... I've been listening. So the other day I was on YouTube and Elevation's church live stream popped up and I was like, am I going to click it? So I clicked it, of course. And I just think what they do is so fascinating. They're so technologically just like ahead of the game and they're just so good at what they do in a lot of senses worship wise. And so I was watching it and they have a new song out called All of a Sudden. And then I was like, oh, that's kind of catchy. And then I listened to it like 17 times in the last 3 days. So if you're looking for a good worship song, I don't know if it's going to be one that really catches on. I don't like.
You've been over in the past few years with some that have
come out. No.
You told me, I need to share this story. You told me about a song that you're like, it's the next blessing. It's the next way maker.
It could have been.
It wasn't close.
COVID killed it.
No, this was post COVID. COVID, you are.
Which song was this?
He doesn't probably even remember.
I'm going to get it. You keep talking. Continue on. Darn it.
All right, you go and see if he comes back to it.
I mean, I'm going to look it up.
I mean, I think I'm just always a fan of King of Kings by Hillsong.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's just a song that I don't understand how in one song, in like 3 minutes, you explain the entire story of God.
She's
incredible.
Incredible. At it. Brooke.
Yeah.
Ligerwood, whatever her last name is. She's phenomenal at it.
Yeah.
Her writing is insane. Son of Suffering.
Yeah, it was the Son of Suffering. Yeah. I knew.
Which is a great song.
It is a great song. If you haven't listened to it, Son of Suffering, go check it out.
I just don't trust you anymore.
It's too theologically deep.
No, it's not.
It's too real.
No.
Is what.
That's not.
Because it's all about Jesus' suffering and how we join him on that suffering. And people don't want to sing that on Sundays. They want things that are easier. And so then it never caught on, but I still believe in it. So if you guys
it's a
want,
great song.
It's so good. And they did do it at Passion 1 year. So
you thought that was going to be it?
Well, no. I had already made that definitive statement prior to Passion. Then they did it at Passion, and I thought this is the moment. It was the catalytic moment to launch us into the next great worship song. And like every good opinion, sometimes it's not good.
It doesn't even invite us into suffering.
I don't remember.
It has nothing to do with us suffering and everything to do with the fact that this innocent, perfect Son of God suffered. So people actually love that. Okay, I don't think it has anything to do with us suffering.
I haven't listened in a while. I'm a little rusty.
It's a phenomenal song.
Yeah.
No, it's a great song.
Okay, but now you got to do your song.
Made for You, Josh Baldwin, right now is just hitting for me. It's the
2004?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In the height of Chris Tomlin.
How old is it? It just came out. Okay.
Yeah, within the last two months. How dare you, sir?
I don't know. I haven't heard it.
He writes in a way that I think fits our context corporately. Mm. And when I say our context, I mean Sunday morning. He tends to write in such a way that corporately you can just get behind it and sing it with ease, yet hits the melody. Every time he writes a song, I feel like the hook is incredible.
Mm.
It just... helps me remember the song, whatever. It's just made for you. Great worship song. It throws a little identity in there for us, which it's going to love me. Anytime there's identity in there for me or the word hallelujah, I'm in for it.
That's me and holy lately. If they can put the word holy in a song, you just got an extra 15 streams for me.
I think we're going to do holy forever at some point on Sunday morning. I'm so excited.
Amazing.
For it.
Great song.
I'm pumped for it.
You should join us. Watch it. Holy forever. There.
Look at this.
There you go.
Ah, What a pro.
Thank you. Emily, what about worship?
Well, I feel like worship is just a very abstract concept. There's a lot of things that it can be. Mm-hmm. Like you show up.
Did we hear your go-to song?
Mm-hmm. Were you not paying attention?
No.
King of Kings, remember?
Yeah, oh, Brick yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Brick Ligertwood.
Yeah.
I don't know if I said it. I'm sorry. It's
fine.
You were deep in searches.
I was in it.
But worship is just kind of an abstract concept. It's a word we throw around a lot that has so many different meanings and so many different implications. And there's worship that both happens like Sunday morning or Sunday night at Oasis for that hour where we're gathered together. But then there's also worship that happens when we leave and we go to work and we go to class and we hang out with friends and we're with our family. Like our whole life gets to be this opportunity of worship. And so today we're kind of just asking this question, what does it mean to worship kind of both in service but also outside of service? Mm-hmm. So maybe a question I'd like to just throw at you guys, how would you define worship?
Yeah. I mean, we would define worship as just the response to who God is and what he does. And that's part of the beauty of when we talk about worship, both in the church and outside the church, it's God's not just active in the church. And so our worship through song, our worship through the word, our worship through fellowship that happens in the building is, yes, a response to who God is and what he does. Yet then when we go and live our lives and we're in our classrooms and our workplaces with our families and our friends, God's still active there and he's still just as good there as he was in the church building. Mm-hmm. And so we still respond in worship and it might look a little bit different, but that's where the posture of worship starts, is when you recognize this is who God is and this is what he does in past, present, future.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, what God has done in the past, even if I'm still in a position where I still need him to move, what he's done in the past through Jesus will always make him worthy of my praise, of my adoration, and even just who he is and his character, even besides Jesus, like that will still always make him worthy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's crazy when we talk about worship, that it doesn't always depend on my present circumstance. Yeah. It's really not dependent on me. It's always dependent on who God is, and he never changes.
For sure.
Yeah. It's so good.
Maybe moving on, like, why do we worship?
I mean, even there, right there, it's because of who he is, that he's worthy of worship. Like, Revelation, you're going to find it all over. You have angels screaming out, singing in the throne, worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power. And, I mean, in Revelation 5, it says, power, wealth, wisdom, strength, honor, glory, and praise. Mm. Everything you are, he is worthy because of who he is. Yeah. So nothing to do with you. But also in that, right before that in Revelation, I'm going to get into it a little bit. I love the worth of God and why that is the number one reason why we should worship. Because we have in our Western culture, Christian only defining worship as the music we sing on Sunday morning. Like we've made it consumeristic and in that a little bit, we made it about us. So it's like, how do we get back to realizing it is about who God is? And so in Revelation 5 it says, you are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals because you were slain, which relates to Hebrews, where the writer, an author of Hebrews in Hebrews 9 says, with his own blood, the sacrifice of Jesus, not the blood of goats and of calves, he, being Jesus, entered the most holy place once for all time and secured our redemption forever. Mm-hmm. Jesus is worthy of our praise because of the blood that was slain, which secured our redemption. And so it's like, because of who he is, what he's done, that's enough to worship. Nothing. And in that outcome of that, it's like, I'm redeemed, I'm restored, I have a relationship, I have access to, but it's because of who he is, what he's chosen to do.
That's so good.
It's like salvation is not a small thing. Like
at all. Like that's the blood's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the resurrection, the blood's enough.
Yeah.
Like it's just, yeah.
But yeah, maybe let's just dive into like, so that's what it is, that's why we worship, but looking more at how do we worship. I think whenever I come to Oasis or we have ministry prayer, one thing you're going to hear me say a lot is that God has invited us to worship because I want us to know that our worship did not start because we did something right. It started because God, out of his loving kindness, wanted to be with us, and we get to worship him through that.
Yeah. And even like when we wind that back, worship didn't start with us. It started with God creating, right? When you talk about stuff that God did.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, there's the salvation moment, which is the cornerstone for our faith, Jesus Christ and what he did. But go back to the very beginning when God created. Like when you step out and you see the beauty of creation, your response is worship. When you see all that we have and all that God has made, the response is worship. And so even like to be a created person of God, like he made us, like we've talked about, to be worshipers. We have an A.W. Tozier quote where it says, God made us to worship him, and when we're not worshiping, we're stars without light, sun without heat, or birds without song. like to worship God is inherently woven into who we are as people. And so, yeah, like you said, God, or I even think of Jesus in the New Testament when he says, if you don't worship, if you don't praise, the stones will cry out.
Yeah.
Yep. Like that's the level of worship that God is due. And that's what our response, we join with all of creation to sing worship and praise to the Father. And that doesn't start when we show up and we sing the right songs or show up or we bring like our best. It shows it started when God created the world.
Yeah. So that starts with just acknowledgement is what you're talking about. So Romans 1, right? Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his internal power and divine nature have been seen clearly.
Yes.
And so because those things are seen clear when you walk out and see nature, when you literally, one of my favorite moments with my wife when we first got married when she was in grad school was she'd come home and not in grad school, but also undergrad, she's learning things about the human body because she's in medicine. And she'd come home and she'd open up her textbook and I'd get overwhelmed because I couldn't read it. And she was like, this is how God created us. And just seeing her acknowledge the reality of who God was because of what he's made and given. I was like, these things are seen plainly. So we are without excuse, Romans says, to worship starts with that acknowledgement.
Yes.
It's so good.
So what would be like some practical advice in how to show up to worship, understanding that like God's invited us?
I mean, I think just the basic idea of what does it mean to accept an invitation, right? If you're invited to anything, I think you show up with a certain posture. There's some gratitude. There's some expectance of what that will look like. And there's some just posture of humility and love and openness. Like if you show up to a party and you just are bitter and in a corner and you don't really want to be there and like you came because you felt obligated and like that's not the way you accept an invitation. Like you come with excitement, you come and you bring your whole self to it, you come and you're grateful that you got that, like some of that stuff where it's just what does it mean to basically accept an invitation. And so when God has invited us into worship, you show up with gratitude and humility and the correct posture and expectation and joy. And then God responds back, and that's the conversation of worship in a lot of ways.
And a recognition of what exactly was I invited into.
Yeah.
And you wrote this down, that it's his presence, right? I didn't earn it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm showing up in gratitude knowing, oh, worship didn't start because I showed up and now I've entered into the presence of God. It's God has made his presence in his grace known and available to me. Therefore, I can show up, accept the invitation into his presence, which is why it's not just a Sunday morning corporate thing, but also a weekly all the time thing. But I have to acknowledge and accept. I love that language of accept. One of my favorite things to do when I was leading worship was corporately together before we start, we accept God's invitation to worship because he's invited us into this moment.
Yeah. And even the parable of the wedding feast
that
Jesus talks about where this man, he sends out all these invitations. Everybody says, I'm too busy. Yeah. I got all these other things going on. And the servants come back and say, there's nobody available for your party. Yes. And so then he says, go and find anybody you can, anybody who's willing. And the people who declined his invitation, then he rejects them when they wanted to show up. Because when he sent the invitation, they were supposed to cancel everything that they had to come to this banquet feast.
Yeah.
And they didn't want it. They didn't take it. And so then God offered it to people who would. And so when we step into worship, it's like God has offered you an incredible opportunity to step in and to sit in his presence. And if you don't take that, there's consequences. And God's going to continue to just offer that to other people. But for the ones who will accept it, what a gift.
Yeah, so good.
It's ongoing. Like it started at creation. It doesn't stop when you leave the building, but it's an ongoing worship that we're continually invited into. So how do we... Maybe for those of us who like don't feel like this presence of God inviting us, like we maybe show up to work or to our family or even to Oasis and we just like don't really feel it. How do we understand that God is still there and that we can still worship him even though we don't feel his presence in that moment?
How do I say this kindly? And I wrestle with it too. I think it's to be human is to have feelings and learn what do we do with our feelings. You're raising little kids, right?
I'm trying to.
Right, but they've got feelings and they're learning at what it, and it's really obvious in toddlers and babies that it's like, oh, you don't really know how to handle your feelings. And then you get to adult life and it's like, oh, you still have feelings and you don't always know how to handle those. And so when we step into a worship moment and our feelings are not aligned with what we know our purpose is in that place, we don't reject our purpose. We train our feelings. And we teach ourselves that our feelings, yes, are important, right? Don't discredit that which you're feeling, but they're not ultimate. they're indicators. There's probably some reason you're feeling that way, so you should process that. But when you step into the throne of God, those become subservient to your purpose in that place. And so you start to worship, and your feelings will follow your worship. And that doesn't mean you get the Holy Ghost bumps. That doesn't mean you leave the worship center in tears. But it means when you have worshiped correctly, God responds to that. And so, yeah, there might be peace that follows. There might be joy. There might be hope. And you might leave, and you might have some of the same feelings, but your worship wasn't in vain even still. Like, God received that.
That's good.
Agreed. So our worship, it starts with God. He invites us. But our worship is for God and God alone. And I think it's really easy for me to show up like, I'm going to worship God. And then it's like 7 million other things are trying to enter into my mind and enter into that space whenever I show up to Oasis, whenever I show up to like be with God alone. How do we make sure that we aren't worshiping more than one thing? Yeah.
Can I even jump in before you go?
Yeah, I was going to ask her to go.
Oh.
Go, please.
I just think that ties so well back into your last question.
Yeah.
Is when we get too feelings-based and we get too intrinsically focused, we show up and rob God of what he's worthy and what he's due, like what he's due, and we end up not, in singing the songs, so focused on what do we receive, we end up not worshiping anyway. Mm-hmm. We've worshiped ourselves. If you step into a moment saying, I need to hear these songs by these musicians to feel this way, to have that vibe, to be able to leave feeling this type of way, you didn't step in there for any intention to glorify the Father. You actually tried to fill your, like you glorified yourself and you made yourself the ultimate in that. So like when it talks about feelings, when you let your feelings serve the Father rather than you serve your feelings, like that is a keystone moment, a core habit that needs to happen in order for you to worship God alone. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yep.
I just think when you step in and you're like, man, I need to feel this. I need to have this. Like you've put yourself as an idol. You've made yourself the pedestal.
Yep.
And that's robbed your worship.
I mean, I heard someone say once there's three masters that you can follow. It's you can follow God, you can follow the enemy, or you can follow yourself. Mm. And so even when Jesus says no one can serve two masters, you're going to hate one and love the other. Yeah. Contextually, it's about money.
Yeah.
But if I'm really serving money, what I'm saying is I need something in security. So money becomes the ultimate priority. But really what's the ultimate priority is me.
Yeah.
And myself. So I serve myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it fits really well.
Good. Yeah. Anyways, you had a good question. What was it?
Well, it was just that. It's you come in and there's things that distract. So it's like I can't serve God in these things while these things are there. So you ask like, how do you combat that? What does that look like for you as you come into Oasis, as you enter into even a daily Monday morning of trying to worship God in the midst of just the day when distractions come? How do you combat that?
I've heard it said that there's two different ways you can go about it. There's the first way where it's like you do your best to just block all of the distractions out and focus solely on God. I can't do that. I've tried. I can't do it. And so usually what I do, like even if I have my own personal time with God, usually I have like a sticky note near me. And if I just have something that repeatedly comes up to my mind and is trying to distract me, I write it down and I know I'm not going to forget it. It's there if I need it. But then what I also do is like, man, if these things are repeatedly coming to my mind, I'm going to ask what God is doing through them. Because if worship starts with him, and his presence is in me, like living in me, and his presence are in the spaces, then he's going to be there and I can still worship him in those spaces, even though I'm going to try and limit how they're distracting me right now so I can focus on him. But I know he's going to send me out into those and I have an opportunity to follow him in obedience there.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's good.
What do you think are some things that like from young adults and college students entering Oasis that we worship a lot?
Oh man, I think feelings, right? I think I've hit that pretty hard. If you didn't catch the feelings part, just go back, listen again. You can DM me. We can talk about feelings a lot. But
I love feelings.
It's good. They're valuable. But man, we're a culture obsessed with feelings.
Yeah, and we allow them to not just we move them from indicators to decision makers.
Yeah, and they just dominate. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I think it's really key to push back on that. But just dreams too, right? Dreams for us often become idols because we don't hold them loosely enough. It's not that your dreams are bad. It's never been about your dreams being bad. Are you willing to surrender those to God? And so when you step in and worship, like I think God is ultimate in priority and he has dreams for your life. He has a will for your life. He's got a plan for you. And if you hold your plans so tightly, whether it's the American dream or a certain relationship or a certain job, or when you hold that so tightly that God is not willing to work, God is not... you are not allowing God to work his plan over your plan. you're failing to worship him like he's deserving of. Yep. Other ones?
I mean, those that you what you said was all of them, really.
Okay.
I mean, that's it's you could list all the things and it still comes down to I am what I desire, what I want. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to. Mm. That's what really so relationships, it's what I want. Where is God in it?
Yeah.
Money, it's what I want. Job, career, it's what I want. Mm-hmm. It's my desire. So when you say dreams or devotion or desires, like has that been surrendered?
Yeah.
Because you could put everything into that.
Kind of the next point we have here is that worship requires our entire self. So how do we show up into a space of worship and prepare ourselves to show up to a space of worship, giving ourselves fully over to God, not just like 25% or 99% mm-hmm. or 50%?
I'm trying to even process the question as I think through it. But I would say, and I think you're leading in this, it depends on how you show up. Like, I think the moments where I am not fully present to worship God, I have to reel back and look at what did I spend the last 4 to 6 hours doing? And if I didn't, and not that you need 6 hours to prepare for church or to live a life of worship, but like, worship takes time to be able to give your whole self there. And so you have to be able to just be prepared to step into church of worship. Or like when we're talking about worship, maybe in your quiet time in the morning, right? Like if you want to give your whole self to God, you're going to have to, like you say, set aside the sticky notes, set aside the agenda for the day, set aside the things that you're anxious about, or bring those to the table at least. And so some of that is how do we prepare and are we ready to give our whole selves to God? Because if we're not ready, then there's no way we'll be able to. Is that kind of where the question was going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know. I've been reading some A.W. Tozer lately.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of Tozer quotes in our show today. But one of them was just saying, like, if we're not willing to worship God with all of ourselves, then we probably didn't worship. And that one hit me pretty hard. And I started thinking about all the times, like, even just showing up to work, showing up in my community, showing up in my family, showing up to church, where it's like, man, like I'm like 85% in today. Like I'm really feeling it. But there's like that 15% of my life that I want to guard and not completely hand over to be in alignment with God. And so how do we like prepare to give that 15%, whatever that percentage is,
okay,
and surrender to who God is?
Yeah.
It's a deep question.
No, it's good. I think it's hard to give practical advice in the midst of what you're saying is, what does it look like to really offer God our entire selves as living sacrifices? And that's our whole worship. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's what Paul encourages and extorts in Romans 12.
Yeah.
And so what really does it mean to offer body, so entire self, as a living, as an expression of continual sacrifice, service, and submission mm-hmm. to God? And it's, I don't know if there's a practical, here's what it looks like to give up and give God that 15%. But am I willing in that moment to say, God, there is something here that is not yours, help? Because that's some of it for me too, is the whatever percent, the thing that I'm struggling with, the thing that's not surrendered, the thing I'm struggling to submit into or give to him or ask him to speak into. It's in some moments in my life, I needed his help to do it because I just didn't know how to.
Well, I think part of that is we've hit a couple of these points when Romans 12, man, it's such a good passage of text for this specific conversation, because it's therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, like when you're struggling to fully surrender yourself in worship, or if you're holding something back, you need to go back to the place and you need to remember God's mercy. Because when you look at the cross, you look at what he's done for you, you remember Jesus' sacrifice, you look at all that he's given you. To hold back that thing, whatever it is, as big or as small as it might feel to you, it's nothing. It pales in comparison to God's mercy. So if you start in this place that says, God, you are worthy and your mercy is great, then you can walk through the process. This is your true and proper worship. Then renew your mind. As people, God has given us a mind that's so unique and beautiful compared to anything else in creation. And both the enemy and God recognize the power of that. Like when we're in a mental health crisis nowadays, or you just look at what it means to be human, like so much of what we do and how we function starts in our mind. God has given us very creative, intelligent, logical, reasonable minds. And so our worship starts up here too. Yeah, there's heart in it.
Yep.
Do I love God? But there's also mind in it.
Yep.
Do I understand God? Am I committed to God? Is my mind renewed about God? And so that's where it comes back to, like, how do we prepare for worship? right? If you're filling your life with garbage and then you show up and you try to worship, your mind's not ready to worship, right? If you blast terrible music all week and then you're like, yeah, but the worship at church just doesn't hit. It's like your mind's not renewed. And you show up to your classmates and you show up to your coworkers and you're trying to love them as an act of worship to God. But what you're watching on your screen or the shows or TV shows you're watching are constantly objectifying people. Your mind is not ready to worship. And so some of this, yes, we see God's mercy, but then we also do this mental work by God's grace through his spirit to have a renewed mind that we might actually worship.
Yeah, that's good.
So worship, it starts with God. It's for God alone. It requires our whole self. But in essence, like we've been talking about how worship is a response to who God is and what he does. And what are some ways that this response looks like?
Yeah, gratitude's my favorite. I mean, it's a command from Colossians. Paul says it actually three different times where gratitude, thankfulness is a command to do it for a specific reason, because it's one of the greatest responses you can have to God for who he is and what he's done. And so what does it look like to not just recognize the daily things in which I can look back in my life or the things in my life where I notice and know God has worked and be grateful for those things. It's where can I show up even in hard moments and hard situations and hard relationships and just be grateful, whether it's because of God's mercy, who did because of the sacrifice of Jesus and resurrection of Jesus redeem and save me. Where is it in the midst of, can I show up with a disposition of gratitude despite what I feel? It's a choice. It really is. I do believe that it's a choice. You can be thankful for, you can make lists of things to be thankful and grateful for if you decide to.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a great response.
And that's where, so the next one I'll probably talk about is faith, but both faith and gratitude, like worship is for God, yet it brings such blessing to us.
For sure.
Right. Yes. Should you show up and thank God for who he is and what he's done? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Will that radically change who you are if you pursue that and consistently step into that? 100%.
Without a doubt.
So if you show up in faith, and part of some of my favorite songs, just like you, are songs that declare God's character. This is who you are. Like Waymaker, you know, it's had its good run, right? But even when I hear it now, to be reminded of who God is, like, to instill that faith in me, yes, God, I am remembering your character and I'm responding to who you are regardless if I recognize it or not.
Yep.
Yet when I recognize it, the blessing that brings in my life, because there are situations I'm walking through that I need you to be a way maker. Even when I don't see it, I need the reminder that you're working. And so this is true and I need to offer that to you, yet it brings such immense benefit to my life.
So I studied worship. Like, I have a degree in worship. I'll just say that here. But we talk about how worship is both horizontal and vertical. So it's vertical in us giving our praise to God, but it's horizontal in the fact that worship impacts the people around you. So even when you're in and singing those songs, like, and declaring the character of God, you are encouraging another brother and sister in Christ through the character of God and through your worship. And part of faith isn't just expressing your praise to God, but part of faith is encouraging other people in the body of Christ into who God is and what he does.
Yeah.
That's mind-boggling to me.
It was one of the most evangelical moments for me when the first time I came to Oasis was to see people physically, emotionally express worship through through music corporately together. Like, because what it did in my soul as someone who wasn't following Jesus at the time, so yes, brothers and sisters, but also those who don't know Jesus, what they're seeing in that, at least what I saw in that, what the Holy Spirit did in me in that, was they believe this and they're all in on this.
Mm.
And it started making me resolve, why?
Yeah.
Like they
what's wrong with these people?
Well, a little bit though. Yeah, I mean, but they believed it.
Yeah.
It was a belief and expression of complete thankfulness, gratefulness, and worship towards God. And that did something in my soul. It was an evangelical moment, like an evangelist moment for me to see, like, oh, this is a real thing. Why?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And even when you're sitting in the classroom, right? I think, or in your secular space, like when you're there and you praise God. And so that might look like an offhanded statement. That might look like offering prayer before meals. That might look like having a God glorifying conversation. When you do that, yes, it brings glory to the Father. And then that's the direct impact of the people around you. Cause you never know. Like, I was at a bachelor party this last weekend and like we prayed before a meal and it happens to be that one of the guys at the table like wasn't a Christian. Like, that's our habit. That's our practice, right? It's our worship. Yet what did that do in him? Or just the way we treat one another. Right, I treat my brothers in Christ with kindness because I know that's how Christ would want me to treat them. But then when they see that, that's worship. Yeah, that's good. And they're impacted by that. And so there's just things like that where you're like, oh man, this is just what it means to be a Christian and a Jesus follower. And it's like, yeah. And when you live in that way, which God has called you to live, you respect and you're obedient to him, and that's worship. And it has impacts on the people around you. Yeah. It just does.
I think obedience is the hinge between what happens on Sunday versus what happens throughout the rest of our week. Mm-hmm. Because throughout the rest of your week, you might have small group, you might be hanging out with friends, but you're probably not at Oasis with like 700 people singing Waymaker. I hope you are, but like you might not be there.
Maybe you're just in class, just accounting. And you're just like, you're way, I don't know this problem, but you're a Waymaker. God, I don't see you working at work.
Even anyways, I think obedience is this hinge because, like, my prof would always say that worship is the best evangelism that God's people can do. Mm-hmm. But if worship is obedience, then one of the best things we can do as God's people is, like you said, like, to be in class and to be a Christian mm-hmm. and to follow God. Mm-hmm. And does it mean, like, we don't say the judgmental thing in our head? We ask God for forgiveness when it comes through our head. Yeah. Like, we choose to love our enemy. We choose to have patience. Mm-hmm. We choose to show up expectant to what God can do in spaces that don't look like a church. Mm-hmm. Because God's church isn't a building, like it's his body that is being his image and doing work empowered by his spirit in and among his people. That is true and proper worship.
It's good. So good.
I mean, even this last Sunday, or I don't know, two Sundays ago or whatever it is. So like I preached that message from the in everything. It's the first part of this series, and it was on Philippians 4:4-5. And like Paul's command, rejoice always. I say it again, rejoice. And rejoicing has an emphasis and aspects of worship in it. And I remember I was preaching that message and Emily was at a panel and we were trying to figure out how to like, and on Sunday night, I just added in this like random like piece. Did you listen?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I just was talking about worship and just like this test, litmus test of like, what does it look like to worship in here? Because if we don't worship in here, we won't worship out there. And like, there's just aspects of that are true, right? If we don't come in and we don't bring our whole selves to God in the space where that's been created for us to give our whole selves to God. There's no way we give our whole selves to God when we're out in the real world.
Yeah. It's good.
Any final thoughts on worship?
That was my final thought.
I think even the idea of being called a royal priesthood and a holy nation, Peter says, it's so that we could declare the praises of him who called us out of darkness. And that looks like holistic worship on Sunday and throughout the week.
Yeah, worship is powerful, and there's so many things that God does when God's people extend his character and show who he is, and I think that's why, part of the reason why we're doing this podcast today, because what you do throughout your week influences the people around you, whether you're in class or you're at work, like, you have influence, and you get to worship God this week, and so I think our encouragement to you is just take some time. What does it look like on Sunday for you to worship? What does it look like for you to worship throughout the rest of the week? But yeah. Good.
Best of luck.
Good.
Get some ice cream.
Luck. Get some ice cream.
Godspeed.
Listen to, what is it? Son of Suffering. We had I Surrender All. King of Kings.
I Surrender All.
Made for More. What was the one you said?
All of a Sudden.
Oh, that too.
All of a Sudden.
See you guys.
Goodbye. Kill this before we get copyright.